Okay, folks, welcome back. I'm Jake Ellenbogen. He is Gary Sheffield Jr. This is Yankees Unloaded, and a special episode for you guys because we know the Yankees are going to play until Friday, and we're not going to be your regularly scheduled program in place of the Yankees because I don't think you want, you know, Gary and Jake playing baseball one on one. That wouldn't be very fun. But but we got a episode 89, and it is going to be touching on a lot of different things that we took away. The MLB draft is still underway. The last round of it is tomorrow. The last day is tomorrow. The final rounds, 11 through 20. Still crazy that there's 20 rounds of MLB draft.
Yeah, round. I know technically talent comes from all types of rounds in baseball, but it's hard to keep track of all that stuff. So we're going to keep it, what, 1 through 10 today? And just try and break that down, because if you paid any attention at all to the Yankees draft today, you didn't have to know any of these names, and you can see positionally, Jake, something happened today, okay? They committed to something, and that something was the starting pitcher, or pitchers in general. I mean, there's been a ton of question marks of what we do with these relievers, right? Clay Holmes, Loaisiga, to which you mentioned before we went live, obviously dealing with injury. He's out the whole year. And the Yankees had to figure out, how do we replace all these guys? And it seems like they're doing it through the draft. So, Jake, why don't you take it away for our first round pick?
Yeah, Gary. So for those of you, fair warning, for those of you that don't want to listen to the rest of the show because they think it's just going to be about the MLB draft, we're going to tie it in to the organizational depth and how even we see the trade deadline going, because
which is the important stuff, because that's how that's what helps us immediately, is the trade stuff. And Jake, you think that today's news of all these pitchers actually might help us be more aggressive? Because I do feel the Yankees fans would say that the Yankees haven't been as aggressive as they'd like. But Jake, your whole point is that this draft maybe means the Yankees are just going all in on the trade market to fill some of these offensive holes. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm glad I slept on it because I did not like the Ben Hess pick last night, and we didn't get a chance to record last night's show, and it worked out perfectly because we ended up just waiting for all 10 picks to come through. So the reason I didn't like the Ben Hess pick initially, who is the guy the Yankees got 26th overall out of Alabama, look, when I look at the guys that were available, I mean, he wasn't even my favorite. Like, my number one pitcher remaining was a guy we talked about, well, I talked about on the show, Brody Brecht. And I thought he had the best stuff in the draft outside of the pitcher that went second. Okay. So I was really kind of bummed, especially because I got the feeling, and just, you know, reading, you know, different articles before the draft, I got the feeling the Yankees were going to stay away from prep, you know, prospects. And I mean, I told you off air yesterday, there's no point for the Yankees, the New York Yankees, to care about prep school prospects. There's just no point, unless you're getting Bryce Harper, which you're not because you're not picking that high. There's no point. You're always win now. You're always spend, spend, spend. You have $300 million payroll. There's 0 point to you waiting on a 17 or 18 year old. Now, it comes with the territory. If you're in the international player pool market, a lot of those kids are 16, 17. By all means, use your money. Don't just sit there and not get anybody. But in the draft, when we're talking about the draft, you should be drafting college players, because those are guys that, you know, on average, Gary, it takes 2.5 years to get to the MLB as a first round college player. If you are a prep school first rounder, takes about 3.8 years to get to the MLB. So that's a year and 3 months.
Good Lord, you can finish a whole college degree by then. That's honestly insane. But it does go to show you, Jake, if you're a team like the Yankees and the Dodgers, yeah, I guess if you have just a slew of talent the way Houston's had the last few years, you can maybe make the argument if there's a can't-miss guy, someone you really want, right? Like what happened with Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks, right? They feel like, well, we could take our time with this guy. But let's be clear. The Yankees need help, and they need it soon. This is a win-now organization. You've got Aaron Judge. And a lot of people outside this organization would probably look at the Yankees and say, well, this team, they're good, but who's that guy that's hitting seventh? Who's that guy hitting eighth? Well, drafting guys out of prep, aren't going to help you solve that equation. Okay.
They've already done that.
Right. It's not going to help. So yeah, is it a little short-sighted and it's a little impatient to say that you want college kids because you want them here soon? Maybe you can make that argument to me. But Jake, I'm okay admitting I'm a little bit impatient and I want guys to help right away, because I know this isn't the NFL where you just plug and play a cornerback, but this is Major League Baseball. And when you're talking about drafting a guy, and for those of you who are big Yankees fans, we talked about Jason Dominguez, not in like the last year or two, a long time ago. We've been talking about Jason Dominguez since he was 15, 16 years old. We were watching on like Nokia footage, watching him hit homers in like the Dominican. Yeah. And people are like, wait till you see this kid. And it's like, that's exciting. All that's great. And it's seeming like it's going to work out in the long run. But do you see how long that turnaround is, Jake? That was like 4 or 5 years ago. It's a long time. So having said this, this draft is actually something to be excited about on the mound and
absolutely,
in the short term for the trade deadline, because I guess unless we end up with like Whit Merrifield, which I mentioned to you, Jake, then it's looking good. You have to believe that the Yankees aren't going after solutions in the draft offensively. They must be going out there and pulling the trigger on trades and giving up on guys like could be Will Warren. You never know who in our system they might be moving on from.
Yeah. I mean, let's just, obviously we'll go pick by pick, but before we do that with Ben Hess, and I'll break him down, give you my thoughts on him, and, you know, of course, what scouts are saying, because that also matters. The pitchers right now, the notable pitchers in the system, okay, Will Warren is in AAA. So we'll start with the AAA guys that are notable. Will Warren, number 7th overall prospect in the farm system, AAA. Clayton Beter, number 13, AAA. Yoendris Gomez, number 17, AAA. Jack Neely, number 24, AAA. And he's somebody, he could be in the big soon. He's a guy that they really like. Could also be traded away, though, to be fair. AA, I say Chase Hampton is AA. He'll probably be AAA. He's right now in single A trying to work on some things because he got hurt and he's on a rehab assignment. Number 3 overall prospect. I think this draft signaled to me that he is not safe. And I thought for sure he was. I thought this was a guy that would probably see the rotation. They would not give him up. They even were willing to give up Drew Thorpe, who they really didn't want to part with. I think that they would be more willing to give up Chase Hampton. Brock Selvidge, number 10, AA. Zach Messinger, number 21, AA, very likely be traded, I think. Tristan Vreeling, number 22, AA. Danny Watson, number 27 in the farm system, AA. Then you have your single A guys, Kyle Carr, number 11, very likely be traded. Cade Smith, number 23, likely be traded. Justin Lang, number 30, likely be traded. And then you have your rookie ball guys, okay? Henry Lalanne, who's probably never going to see the bigs for the Yankees. I think he gets traded. He's the 8th overall prospect. And I mean, we're talking about 2028, 2029.
And that's great news, by the way. That is great news for us because it means value.
Like, exactly.
That's value. That's all you want.
A lot of risk because he has to make it all the way up there. And, you know, he has some really fun stuff. I'm not knocking him at all. I mean, he's 17, he's got a lot of good stuff. The problem with that is they don't have time to wait. And, you know, I think like a move like this to go out and get Hess to kick it off in the first round kind of shows you that a guy like Lalanne and LaGrange, Carlos LaGrange, who is pitching well in rookie ball, he's 16th prospect. I think both of those guys. And then you have Sabier Marte, who's kind of a hidden guy, who this is kind of the fun thing, is that Marte isn't ranked. So a lot of teams might not know who he is. So the Yankees are probably going to be like, yeah, we're going to keep him quiet, you know, still in rookie ball, but he's got some potential there where he could end up being something that you just kind of leave in the background, hope no one begs for or asks for or ever picks up on. And then you just kind of work your way up the rungs. You don't have to trade him. And you can wait for him because it's not like he's one of your pressing guys where it's like, oh, my top 10, I have a bunch of guys in single A that can't contribute. I got to trade those guys because I don't have time to waste. with Marte, no one's going to be asking for him in all likelihood. So
that's true. I will say in general, the Yankees do tend to kind of rank their own prospects the way that they see fit. They're like, oh, we really believe in Lombard Jr. And then 3 years go by and he's hitting 245. And then you'll ask another organization who they want. And they'll say, well, I want the guy who's giving me an output.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about their draft, again, our first round selection, Ben Hess at Alabama, excuse me. This is a guy who, if you look at his numbers, you think, well, what in the world are the Yankees doing? And that's exactly what I thought. But you also have to say, maybe it's not a decision that we would have made necessarily, because Jake, I know you've listed multiple other players that you would have taken. Okay. Yeah. But having said this, if you actually watch the film on this kid, he is a baseball savant. If you like baseball savant, he is going to get you rock hard. That's essentially what I'm telling you. And
so he's like score from first rock hard level?
Not to that level.
Okay.
But I will say, if you watch him on tape, you're seeing a fastball that carries through the catcher. Okay. Yes. So this is a guy who is high spin rate, and you can't teach spin. Okay. Most players that you see in Major League Baseball, a lot of times you're going to watch and say, well, Clayton Kershaw is throwing 94, 95. Why is it that guys aren't catching up to this? And it's a total valid question. It's not just location or release, right? Aim point. It's none of those things. It's spin. That's your answer. The players who can manipulate spin the best tend to have the most success. It's the reason Gerrit Cole decided when he was playing for Pittsburgh, well, I'm throwing a four-seam fastball, and he wanted to throw a curveball. A lot of curveballs, his slider was loopy, and he had a changeup to kind of work with. But what he found out was that the more I snap off spin, and we eventually get into sticky stuff, that whole conversation, is that the more spin went up, the more I started seeing people swing and miss. That's what Ben Hess is for, okay? A lot of people, especially on the broadcast to which I watched, he's already getting the strikeout numbers. And he hasn't even polished off his game to which Matt Blake most often accomplishes with his talent. And so the best comparison that I could give people is Luis Gil. At the beginning of this year and in the last year, Luis Gil was a player that you absolutely would describe has ace-like stuff, but that doesn't mean you're an ace. You need to command your fastball. You need to command a changeup and a slider. If you've got those three pitches working for you, you're going to be successful. And this guy has the stuff. So it's a question now of, you mentioned he changes mechanics a bit during the season. If that happens and we continue to progress in terms of location, I wouldn't say the Yankees can go out there and find themselves an ace, but you can easily make the argument this is a middle of the rotation guy who can be excellent for this Yankees team and hopefully put him in position where you don't have to rely on $25 million pitchers with 5-4 ERAs.
Yeah, so, hopefully not, right?
Good news. Yeah, good news.
Yeah, wanted to bring up something with Ben Hess that will, you know, pretty much kind of bleed into the rest of the prospects most of the way down the row. The Yankees love the Cape Cod League. And if you follow the NFL draft, you'll know a lot of NFL teams, including that team back there, the Los Angeles Rams, love their Senior Bowl prospects, okay? It's the college all-star game that takes place in Mobile, Alabama, and I've covered it three times, so I know that place is jumping with scouts and even, you know, big names. Well, the Cape Cod League is kind of similar. You know, there's a lot of teams that look at that, and that is kind of the best of the best of the college ranks. And Ben Hess and guys that we're going to talk about, you can see in the crawl below, they pitched well in the Cape Cod League. So the Yankees were like, you know, because I keep hearing the whole prioritizing stuff over production. But then I look at the Cape Cod League production out of Ben Hess, a 1.63 ERA. And I'm like, that's kind of production there, no? And, you know, I think immediately our first thought was 5.80 ERA, 1.39 whip while at Alabama, not good. Walk rate tripled last year. Control issues and the injuries. He had a stress fracture in his back in high school and a flexor strain in 2023. But the good news is, like, you know, you had kind of brought up there, he definitely changed his mechanics. Scouts feel really good about his ability to stay, you know, going essentially and not get hurt because he's got a clean delivery. Okay. And, you know, you see that very early on. That's kind of a tried and true thing. If you see a pitcher who has a very funky delivery and the mechanics are not strong, it's a pretty big sign that guy's not making it through the minors without getting an injury. And anyone can get hurt at any given time. But when you have a guy that is basically tripling the potential of getting hurt by having poor mechanics, putting his body in bad positioning, because the reality is when you're pitching, it is an unnatural thing to throw overhand. It is unnatural. The body is not supposed to do that.
Yeah, as natural as Gerrit Cole makes it look, it is not natural at all. No. Go, everyone, do yourself a favor. Go play catch with like your son or your dad. Go play catch. Throw like 20 balls as hard as you can. Obviously, give yourself a warm up. But then tell me how you feel tomorrow. It doesn't feel very good. Okay.
No.
Or go throw off a mound at a local high school and then tell me how you feel in 2 days. You're barely going to be able to lift your arm above your shoulder. And that's the way baseball is. Pitching's not a natural motion. When you watch softball, like if you change the channel and you see softball on ESPN, there's a reason that like a girl can pitch a game and then tomorrow she'll just pitch again. Okay. Because that's natural. Throwing the ball underhand is natural. So what Ben Hess is doing, not natural at all, but manipulating your mechanics to the point where I'm also noticing, Jake, a lot of big bodies the Yankees are going after. A lot of guys who can deal with the wear and tear of a season.
6'5", 255. That dude's
right, and look at the pitchers that we say. Yeah, he's absolutely huge. Look at the pitchers that we've mentioned before who are struggling to stay on the field. We've mentioned Nestor Cortez and his injury history. Stroman. Inability to pitch Marcus Stroman. Stroman's like 5'7.5". Okay. Yeah. These guys, it doesn't mean you can't pitch and stay on the field when you're 5'7", 5'8", but does it help you? No. Does it help Gerrit Cole to be 6'1", 6'2", 6'3", be 225, 235 pounds? Of course it helps. You have leverage. Yeah. It's much easier on your body to do something like that, right? So
absolutely.
I say all that to say this. The Yankees seem to be going after what they're now liking. They're now figuring out we need more guys that you can't consider like a Clark Schmidt, 4 or 5 guy in the rotation body-wise. It seems like they're looking for high prize, high stuff, high value players. And I'll be honest with you, Jake, a lot of teams in Major League Baseball are probably going to be doing it this way from now on, where they don't really look at the numbers. They're not going to look at necessarily the ERA of a kid from Bama and say, well, he only had 14 starts or he only had 11 starts. Because a 5-6 ERA in college isn't the same as having a 5 ERA in the big leagues. In the big leagues, you have 30 plus starts. You're going to get your 35 starts. You have plenty of time to manage that ERA throughout the season and get it back to where you need it to be. In college, you can give up 9 runs in 2 innings of work, get pulled, and never recover that ERA. So that's why I kind of hesitate
to
tell
people. And you got metal bats, too. So
they've got metal bats. People said the baseballs were just jumping in college baseball this year. So I believe that. I really do. The numbers, I mean, you saw what a lot of those
top seem like
picks
a lot of guys
40 bombs.
Yeah, and a lot of guys that were like pitchers, you know, getting drafted early on, they had like this one guy was like, oh, he's gonna be so great. He had an 8 ERA. And I was like, wait, I mean, you know,
8 ERA is shelled. He's getting overrun every inning.
Yeah, I just you know, I think to your point, there's definitely some jump. Maybe they're making the metal bats too strong. I always thought they should move to wooden anyway. That's just me. But, you know,
it's not in the budget.
No, he can reach 99 on his fastball. But I wanted to mention his slider's as good as his fastball. So he's got 2 potential elite pitches, at the very least plus pitches. So I also want to make it a point before we move on to Bryce Cunningham and the rest of these guys. There's no reason, because I think when you hear top prospect, like the number one overall prospect, and you see like Paul Skeens, right? Not all number one prospects in a farm system are built equal. Paul Skeens was the number one overall pick, but the Yankees could absolutely end up with Ben Hess being their number one prospect and be deserving of it and end up being really good. And I want to make that clear because, you know, we've now mentioned it multiple times where Gunnar Henderson was picked. 12 picks after Volpe, ended up being the number one prospect. And I think he was the number one prospect in all of baseball at one point. So, you know, he wasn't drafted number one overall. Okay. Your story isn't written just based on where you were drafted. And Hess is a guy that MLB Network said that he was the 44th overall player. So the Yankees had a different view on it. They might be right. They might be wrong. But I think there's definitely something, you know, a point to be made here, because I mentioned it off air. Mason Miller was a third round pick. Now everybody is, they want, did you see that report? The A's are looking for a Herschel Walker deal. They want a Herschel Walker return.
I get it. You're asking for a lot, but like what? Well, to be honest with you, why wouldn't you?
No, I know, but it's funny, but there's nobody.
What is a
Herschel Walker deal? Is that seven prospects? Is that all your top seven? I don't know.
You know what's really funny though, Jake? When people say they're looking for a Herschel Walker deal, I mean, essentially to wrap it up, they're saying we want everything. Okay, yeah. We want everything you've got, which is funny because realistically, if you had to ask the question, how many players, if we just stop everything right now, we don't sign any of these prospects, right? We wipe all these guys clean and we say the rest of what we got in the system, how many of those players, if you had to count, will be a part of the team in 12 years? Okay.
Maybe
the
more.
List will be maybe one. Maybe, Jake. And we're talking about, you can make an argument that the Yankees have no idea what they're doing drafting position players. Okay. Because you can make that, you can draw that conclusion because if you look out into the field, they don't have any key contributors. Like guys who are franchise cornerstones offensively, you wouldn't be like, oh, yeah, the Yankees drafted him in the 11th round. They found a steal. No, the Yankees don't have a track record of doing that at all. The Yankees' track record is piling up pitching prospects and having essentially a pitching factory of guys that they can throw out there that they can rely on. And frankly, they've done a good job. But you need to leverage that job and that ability by also hitting on the trade market, which is the real important stuff, Jake, and what they do, because you've got to be aggressive getting that talent, because that talent's coming from outside the organization. If you hit on a couple of these guys right here, you can save yourself a lot of money long term. A lot of trouble long term can be solved with guys like Ben Hess, right? So having said that, it's got to be aggressive from this point, because there are going to be a lot of people who watch the show who are like, why should I believe anything the Yankees believe in analytically, right? And I think that you can definitely justify that, and I think it's fair.
Yeah. I also want to point out that Clark Schmidt is the last pitcher the Yankees have taken in the first round. That was 2017. They took James Kaprielian, who went over for the, I believe that was the Sonny Gray trade. He was a first round pick in 2015. And then Ian Clarkin was traded, I think, in that that White Sox deal to bring Todd Frazier to New York in 2013. So, I mean, Eric Jagiello was also drafted that year, and so was Aaron Judge. They didn't have a pick in 2014, but for the most part, this is a team that doesn't really take first round pitchers. I mean, so I was surprised. I definitely was surprised, and I'll say this. I like his projection. I saw number two, number three starter. I'm going to say number two is my projection for him.
Okay.
I think it's going to work out for him. I think that slider is going to be disgusting. And if he... you know, if he can work on, you know, get that change up to, because he stopped using it, even though it was effective, scouts don't know why he stopped using it. So I want to see him get that change up going. He's got a mid-70s curveball as well, but I definitely want to see that change up going, because his strikeout rate is insane for only having really two pitches. So
I like our second round pick actually better. I actually thought our second round pick was a better player than what we got in the first round, because what I see out of Bryce Cunningham. Yeah. I see Tyler Glasnow. Now, is he going to be Tyler Glasnow? Probably not. That's not the way prospects work. But when you have that type of potential, and you can, it's on screen. You just type it in on YouTube and go ahead and watch him. You can see the mechanics all there. He's using a ton of leverage, which again, we've said, the Yankees want to get into leverage because in general, it helps you stay healthy. And so what I like about this kid is that his best pitch, obviously the four-seam fastball. You can't get away. You can't go in the first and second round without having a dominant fastball. But what do you have outside of that? And he's got a nasty changeup. And we're watching it in Luis Hill right now. That slider from Luis Hill, not very good. You saw him dominate Baltimore because, frankly, they don't like breaking balls. But that slider from Luis Hill, it's not very good. Not very high spin rate. Location is to be desired. But you know what neutralizes the fact that that slider's not as good? When that changeup looks like that. When that four-seam fastball has that type of backspin and that type of spin in general, you can get away with that. So this guy, I think he's got that type of potential. I can see ace-like quality out of Cunningham.
Yeah, I absolutely see what you're saying. I also have a three on him. I think he's probably going to be... I think him and Hess could be a 1-2 punch. I mean, I think what we could be looking at is the start of that, the Killer Bees, or, you know, whatever the hell it was. The three guys, wasn't Killer Bees. It was Phil Hughes, Jabba Chamberlain, and the other guy, Ian Kennedy. Okay. I think we could be seeing Cunningham and Hess.
Forgot about them.
Yeah. But I mean, I think we could be seeing Cunningham and Hess come up together, you know, and actually be like a 1-2 punch, because I think they're very similar. Except I think, if we're being honest, Cunningham has more upside. And the reason I say that is because the changeup is disgusting.
He's also coming from a better pitching school. I mean, he's coming from Vandy.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Vandy just knows what they're doing. It's a pitching factory. And if you're good on the mound,
Yankees didn't care. They just drafted SEC guys. It's like the whole draft is SEC guys.
Yeah, well, I mean, SEC, they're grown men over there. It's like that in football. They're just bigger over there, and it's fine. It's more considered like a minor league, which the SEC in college football, and for those of you who
he's also 6'5", 230 pounds. Like, what the hell?
It's going to be a theme. Yeah. It's absolutely a theme, because being 5'9", like, it's fine to be 5'9" when you're working at Orange Julius. But if you're pitching in Major League Baseball, yeah, you want to be bigger. It's easier to throw hard. You don't have to use as much of your body. It's not as strenuous, and it seems to be working for him so far.
Yeah, no, that's funny. It's not if you're working at Orange Julius. So yeah, I mean, his slider is going to need work, but it's not bad. It's not bad. It's not Hess's slider, right? Fastball location has gotten better and better and better. His fastball peaks at 97, so he's not throwing as hard as Hess, but still throwing plenty.
Also not very good numbers, by the way, because I'm telling you, if you turn on a game, you're like, oh, here's the kid that we drafted, and then his numbers pop up on the screen, you want to see an ERA in the twos, maybe in the low threes. No, yeah. That ERA is 6.33
at Vanderbilt. Yeah.
So although, this is all analytics and projections is what we're telling you.
And this was a much better year for him this year. So altogether 6.33, but this year was definitely an improvement. And the Cape Cod League, once again, strikes again, 2.38. ERA was dominant. His changeup is absolutely what's going to decide whether this guy can be an ace or he's going to be a bottom of a rotation guy or not even pan out at all. If that changeup translates, his spin rate is at 2,440 RPMs, okay? The average MLB changeup spin rate is 1,830. So then he has a horizontal break of 20. MLB average is 14. Changeup velocity, 86.3, MLB average of 85.9, and his whiff percentage is at 53%, where the MLB average is 29%. So he projects extremely well if that changeup carries through. Because I would say, I know people would probably say his fastball is his best pitch. Watching him, the changeup is his best pitch. The changeup is what could turn him into an absolute force and shoving on the mound. So I think he's a 2-3. I liked it, the ace stuff there. And if that changeup translates and, you know, he can continue building up the other pitches, he also has a cambio, whatever the hell that was called, you know, in the upper 80s.
Remember that?
He's got a cambio. He's got a sweeping slider. He's improved his strength, his athleticism. He's just gotten better. So I think the Yankees struck gold with this pick. They got him at 53. And there were definitely people on Twitter that I saw that thought this guy could go in the first round and probably should have. So, yeah, I'm excited about that one. I definitely like it. His changeup is considered one of the best swing and miss changeups in all of college baseball. So that's pretty good. But this is the one that you texted me. So I was behind and you texted me like, hey, Yankees got Thatcher Hurd from LSU and you really like the kid. So I'll give you the baton here, because he was the 114th overall prospect according to MLB.com. Yankees got him 89th. He turns 22 in December. By the way, Cunningham turns 22 in December as well. So you see a pattern here. But what did you like so much about Thatcher Hurd?
Okay, so if you watched what he did at the College World Series against Florida, you would notice this guy's got electric stuff, but there were a lot of bad misses. Bad. And that's super advantageous for the opposing team, because when you have a nasty curveball, you've got a nasty slider, and it's nowhere near the zone, well, then those takes become much easier. But I will say this. Everything can be honed in through tweaks in your mechanics. This is the type of pitcher. This guy is the one I was telling you about, where I felt like if he had figured this out in college, we'd be talking about a mid first round player. But the fact that he hadn't, you can't take that risk that high in the draft. So I thought it was understandable where he went in the draft. And thankfully, like, did I really have the Yankees picking him? I didn't. I was telling you how much I wanted to see some bats, especially given our position player and lack thereof at the big league level. But this is the type of guy where I try to compare him. I'm trying to figure out who I really compare this guy to. I'd probably say a good version of Sonny Gray. And it's hard to say, because a lot of guys in Major League Baseball that you consider dominant are throwing 97, 98. This guy's probably like 93, 94 from what I've seen. And you don't necessarily have to throw 100 miles an hour, but you do have to command. And that's the one thing that's definitely a little sketchy about this pick, a little bit, Jake, is that when you throw 92, 93, 94, you can give up the long ball if you miss location. We've seen it with Marcus Stroman. We've seen it with Nestor Cortez. There's a huge premium on location when you throw that type of pitch. And I'd say this, we've got to give him an opportunity in the system. Matt Blake, I'm sure, will help out with that. But at the same time, your coaches, they can't necessarily force you to throw the ball where we need it, right? You need to work on that aspect of your game. This is a project, okay? And this type of project can work out for the Yankees. I guess I can't make the prediction that it will, but I like that they put in this type of work.
Yeah, I mean, this is a 6'4", 230-pound guy. I mean, you already see back-to-back-to-back. You're going, you know, big, athletic, quick. His changeup is in the upper 80s. He's got a curveball that sits at 78 to 82. I feel like he's more of like an upper half of a starting rotation if he pans out. But like you mentioned, and scouts had the biggest issue with, his command issues. He has a hard time finding the strike zone. And, you know, even that fastball, you know, your fastball should be the pitch that you feel the most comfortable with. Like, hey, if I need a strike here, I need to throw a strike. I'm at my wit's end here. I just need to get one on the board. You have to feel good about being able to locate that. And he has this sharp break that goes to the right that will go out of the zone. So it's good. It forces whiffs, but it also doesn't go where he wants it to go when he wants it to go there. So, scouts have said if he finds the strike zone, he could be an upper half of the rotation guy. If he doesn't, he's going to likely be developed to be a go-to bullpen, high upside, 1-2 pitch guy with his fastball and slider.
He's not really a pitcher right now. That's the best way I would describe it, is that he's not a guy that is really thinking his way around the mound yet.
No,
he's not commanded his way around the mound yet. He's throwing. But I will say, Jake, there has been a huge emphasis in Major League Baseball and drive line. Now, do I love drive line? No. I don't like watching guys who throw 91, 92, and they feel like, well, if I want to get to the next level, I need to throw 95, 96. So let me pull more out of my body. In my opinion, it's kind of put a bigger emphasis on injuries.
Absolutely.
More guys overextend themselves and get outside of their physical body to try and manipulate the radar gun. But having said that, you can definitely make the argument that, well, we can just take 5 or 6 pitchers rather than 1 or 2 that have all committed to going high stuff, high leverage stuff. And maybe if 1 or 2 of these guys pan out, we found ourselves a closer. We found ourselves a 2. And it seems to be that that's what the Yankees are doing. They're not necessarily going after guys who are craft. I guess you can say that they're more polished pitchers, and you'd think that you were getting that. You're going to the SEC. You must have someone polished coming to your organization. That's not the case. This is somebody that the Yankees have to form, and all the potential is there. It's just a matter of he steps into those shoes.
No, I agree. Another Cape Cod League guy who had a 1.86 ERA. So
I would hate to play in the Cape Cod League. It seems like no one hit. Everyone's ERA is 190 over there. And it's a great league, by the way. It's that league in the Northwoods. Two great leagues in the summer. All the best college baseball players are invited to it every year. And yeah, he's just another one of them.
It's a good sign if you get invited to that. It means you're good enough to be in it, because it's not just like, yeah, I'd like to sign up for the Cape Cod League, please. Like, no.
New jabroni. Yeah, no, dad can't just call and sign you up for it. No,
no, it doesn't work that way. Their fourth pick in the fourth round, 119, they took Gage Zeal out of Miami U, 89th prospect, according to MLB.com. So this was the first one where MLB.com would say they got a steal. And I would say I really like him. Now, I like him for the reason that probably most people don't like him, okay? And the reason I say that is because if you're drafting a guy in the fourth round, you're probably trying to go project. You're probably trying to find traits. And this is a guy, he had a 2.34 ERA in the Cape Cod League. Once again, shocker. His four seam ranges around 93, 95, tops out 97. Went from more of a sinking four seamer to now an elevating four seamer that, you know, generates some whiffs. The cutter that he has, you know, it's like a slider, ranges in the mid 80s. That's his best pitch. His changeup is quality. Has a feel for it. He'll eat up left-handed bats. He's 6 foot, 223, so compact. Delivery is solid. Control, he's got, you know, all that. The mental makeup is raved about. He's got toughness on the mound. But the scouts are split on him because they look at him as he could be a setup man, but they also look at him like, while he doesn't have anything that's dominant, he's consistent. So he should have every chance to move into a starting rotation. Now, the problem with him is, again, the lack of an elite trait. When you get to the MLB, everyone has at least one elite trait. That's the problem, right? So not having that now could really hurt him down the road. But, I mean, that slider cutter, I don't even know what to call it. That's his best pitch. That is the one where maybe he can develop that and turn it into an elite trait. But I think he could be your top setup man. I also think he could be a guy that makes the rotation, because basically you're sacrificing elite skills to have a guy that just consistently pounds the strike zone. And sometimes you look around the league and you see all these guys, especially the Marlins have quite a few, that have essentially all of this potential. I mean, Sixto Sanchez, we talk about him all the time. I feel like this is a Marlins show. Edward Cabrera and the other guy that's totally escaping me. But the reality is all of those, you know, great traits and everything, it leads to there's more variables now. So if you're, you know, a flamethrower, those guys typically don't have great control. Right?
Yeah, not usually.
So no. This guy, Gage Zeal, keep an eye on him. He's going to be 22 in May of 2025. This is somebody that could, you know, definitely be a contributor in the big leagues.
Are you talking about Michael King, or are you talking about Zeal? Because this is a guy that if people aren't committing to you, a lot of times it's because you're a tweener. Stuff wise,
yeah, he's not that physically imposing. He's 6 foot.
You're not two. Yeah, you're not physically imposing. You're 94, 93, 94. They might tell you that he can touch 97. I would probably say that was at like some scouting league where he got touched at 97. They put that up there. He doesn't throw 97. But I'll tell you what could happen, Jake. When you get up to the next level, we saw this with Clark Schmidt. We saw it with Michael King. Both of those players were in the rotation at one point, and we've seen them in the rotation. We see Michael King in the rotation again this year. But Michael King, his velocity spiked up 2 or 3 miles an hour. Same thing with Clark Schmidt. When you put him in the bullpen, all of a sudden those guys that you see as tweeners, suddenly they're high stuff, 95, 96, 97, and they can play. I see this guy as a reliever. I don't see him cracking the rotation. I just think in general, based on what the Yankees have done with the rest of this draft and how much money they spend in general, I don't see a guy that you draft in the fourth round just suddenly being in the rotation, especially given what we have. So yeah, I see this guy as a reliever, and Jake, I'm not that upset because there are some players that we're paying a pretty penny to have in our bullpen that frankly we don't really trust. So I don't know.
The
way
Boone uses the bullpen, I mean, if he's around for another 3 years, then Gage Zeal is going to need to be in that bullpen. I mean, there is definitely room for all of these guys. If
they have him pegged as a setup man, okay, yeah. Is what all the scouting reports that I'm reading. This is a future setup man. You can easily make the argument that the Yankees, yeah, they need a closer, right? And people are going to ask us whether or not that's Mason Miller, whoever that guy is.
Yeah.
I said at the beginning of the year, Class A, but now Cleveland's the best team in the AL. So that's not going to happen.
No.
But you can never.
You got the number one pick, too.
It's unbelievable. I guess the reward for not spending money.
Yeah. Good Lord.
Congratulations.
So yeah, I think you and I both like. I mean, the first four picks were good. I liked all four. I mean, you know, I like you, I wanted a bat. Definitely wanted Dakota Jordan, who fell to the Giants in the fourth round. That's the guy I want at 26. But MLB is different than other drafts. Like, Jordan was a guy that at one point was being talked about as a top 20 player. But a lot that goes into this, our teams will literally be so cheap in the draft, they won't draft the best player available because they don't want to pay him. So it's a different game. It's not
these
like
kids are eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in the minor leagues, and these teams are still trying to find a way to spend less money. That's and Jake, by the way, isn't our fifth round pick Grayson Carter? Isn't he our favorite draft pick so far? Because we haven't introduced him.
He's up there for me. I think he's a lot of fun. Listed as the 226th per MLB.com. Now I also want to make a note
excited
of this.
About him.
Okay. I want to make note of this. 226th out of all the prospects. This isn't like, oh yeah, if he was viewed as this, no. When they're ranking guys, they're ranking them for what they bring to the table. This guy could be the best relief pitcher in the entire draft, but he's not bringing everything to the table. He's not bringing starting. They want to see the best, most well-rounded guys. That's what the rankings are based on. So I don't want to say take the rankings with a grain of salt. So, but like, I do think Grayson Carter is being undervalued here. And the reason I say that is because his four-seam fastball, which, you know, it gets us excited over here because, you know, we're a big fan of Mason Miller, and his fastball can hit 103 just like Miller's does. And, you know, it's, they said it ranges from 96 to 99. I never saw him hit 96. He was in the hundreds the entire time I was watching.
I think he threw one ball like 97. And they're like, yeah, I can see it going 96.
Yeah, like it ranges. I'm like, all right, well, that's a very wide range there for.
Really? Because when I turn on the TV, I saw 101. Where'd you get 96 from?
No idea. But that fastball is. All right, I'm going to say it. That fastball, and I'm actually looking at the scout grades on MLB.com. The Yankees, I don't think, have anything that they drafted in the 70s. Anything. That is the best trait of anybody in the entire draft that they got. That fastball was graded a 70 out of an 80. Now, an 80 being the greatest thing ever, like 80 would be like Nolan Ryan, okay? That would be Nolan Ryan's fastball. He got a 70.
Like, I think, what's his name out of, they got drafted from Anaheim this past year. Ben, whatever. Ben, is it Ben Joyce?
Ben Joyce. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it's Ben Joyce. It's close to that. Well, anyways, he was throwing 104 at Tennessee. He gets drafted. I'm pretty sure they rated him like a 75, which I don't understand because he has the best fastball you've ever seen. He hit 104, right? So essentially what we're telling you about this player, okay, in Carter, out of Vanderbilt again, not a surprise. This guy has a fastball that is all-time great. He's got nothing else. He's got no nasty slider to speak on. He's got no nasty changeup to talk about. Nothing else. It's essentially, this guy's got absolutely nasty velocity and spin on his four-seam fastball, and now the New York Yankees organization has to do the rest. They have to walk him down the process.
This is who you draft in the fifth round.
This is exactly what you do. That's exactly what we're seeing. This is the type of player who can either just get blown up in high A, you never see him again, or you say, well, how is it possible that this guy's sitting 102 in the eighth inning for the Yankees in the ALDS and nobody wanted this guy? Well, part of the reason they didn't, and this is understandable, Jake.
Yeah.
He didn't have polished breaking stuff. Your job is to pitch. So you would think that along the way, especially pitching at Vanderbilt, that they would figure that out. But so far, Jake, they have not. So now the Yankees feel like Vandy might not be able to do it. We can. And so that's where you see the pick today. So it's either, I think this is a really, really low floor, astronomically high ceiling pick.
My first thought was, wow, this could literally end up being Mason Miller.
Yeah, it could be Mason, baseball savant.
It could be me in the minors or Mason Miller.
Right.
Like, I mean, there's not going to be any in between there. I think he is a boom or bust in every meaning of that. He is Aaron Judge as a pitcher, but you're getting him in the fifth round.
Right.
Like, I mean, that's how I feel. I mean, he has nothing else. Like, if his changeup or curveball, because they were listed as a 45, his slider was a 40, his control was a 40, and his overall was a 40. Who? Right. Grayson Carter. If he gets his curveball.
Yeah, I'm just saying that's who.
Oh, yeah. If he gets his curveball or changeup to, say, 55-60 level, right, he's good as gold. He just needs two pitches. If your fastball is 103, you just need something to keep him honest. I mean, he could probably still blow that shit right by guys. So, I mean, he could probably come up to the majors and strike guys out. Like, I'm not even kidding. Right now, that fastball, he could probably do that. But he would need another pitch. That's when it comes to developing. That's why these guys spend so much time in the minors, because it is hard. Just as hard as it is to hit breaking pitches, it's as hard to throw them by batters. And that's really kind of the whole thing. So could he end up being a setup man for the Yankees? Yeah. But I think his projection to me is, I think he's the next closer of the New York Yankees long term. Now, they'll probably be a closer after Clay Holmes. He's only going to be 22 in December, but Grayson Carter, I'd say 20. By the time, you know, we're looking at, you know, 2027, I'd say he's the closer in the New York Yankees.
Well, you think our chat's ready to move on from Clay Holmes, our closer who's trying to give up ground balls? It's such a stupid idea.
Like Clay Holmes earlier in the year, zero ERA in the Cape Cod League in eight games. So
yeah. PTSD about zero ERA.
Oh, and 6'4", 241. Are you serious? These body types, these dudes are just absolute animals on the freaking mound. I mean, that's just crazy. So moving on to our sixth round pick here. And obviously, we're not going to get as detailed because there's not a lot on these guys. We tried to scrounge up what we could, try to watch what we could. There's just not a lot. When you get down to this point, you know, but Griffin Herring was actually ranked by MLB.com. He's the last one on this list that was 157th. So once again, MLB.com's like, oh, the Yankees got him 181. They got a steal. And this guy has, in my opinion, one of the most disgusting sweepers in this. I mean, it's gross. So
he's herky jerky, man. Those mechanics. I was watching a little bit of them.
And they finally broke the right-handed pitcher trend.
Finally. But it just seems like they're looking for one of those guys to come out, and you're going to go pick on a lefty out of the lineup. You're going to go see a Rafael Devers and Garrett Cole. They're trying to figure out, should they squeeze another inning out of Garrett Cole? Let's go with Herring. Let's go with him. Give him that nasty look. And it feels like when you watch this kid, every single pitch looks like a different release, which you could argue is not necessarily a great thing. It's part of the reason why he's going at this part of the draft.
Yeah.
But he's a really good athlete, and maybe he can make that adjustment. Or maybe there are some players in Major League Baseball that don't necessarily have repeatable mechanics, but it works for him, right? And if there's anybody that you want to be able to do it his own way, and maybe he can get away with it, it's a guy that you can sneak out in the bullpen who's more of a deceptive sweeper, breaking ball type guy like a Sergio Romo. So I think that this can work for the Yankees. Now, do I expect them to be pitching high leverage situations? Not really. These are really hard guys to hit on. And sometimes those players that end up in that situation, they're failed starters. They just kind of get thrown into that situation. So we'll see what happens.
I would project him to be a high leverage bullpen arm, but project and predict are two different things.
They definitely are.
So I think that's my projection. I also want to point out there's a caveat, because I think if he does figure it out and adds more than just his sweeper, he can be in a rotation. And the reason I say it is because Nestor Cortez, he could go that route. And I, you know, the big thing that scouts are saying, and I think it's just the sign of the times, Gary, and, you know, Nestor's kind of one of one. I mean, who else is going out there and throwing 89 mile an hour fastballs and staying in rotations? I mean, it doesn't happen anymore. So, you know, when you look at Herring, this is somebody, in my opinion, that I think is a sign of the times where scouts are kind of like, yeah, you know, maxing out 94, running between 91 and 92 on the four seam, it's not going to cut it. It's not going to get by bats. But then again, I'm watching Nestor strike out 10 guys here and there, you know, and it's like.
That's also why Boone said, because this is really important. I thought that this was also true of Aaron Boone to have said this, that not all pitchers' mistakes have to be home runs surrendered. And it seems like this year, especially when the Yankees starting pitching and the relief pitching started to kind of go by the wayside, well, every mistake that they made seemed to be a solo bomb in the first or second inning, and we were just behind the eight ball immediately. Well, that's the drawback to bringing in guys who throw 92, 93. You don't always have to throw 100, but the good news about throwing 100 miles an hour, to which Herring does not do, is that you can make mistakes and they might end up being a hit, right? They might be a sprayed double. But when the fastball starts to go to 95, 94, 93, suddenly you can make a really bad mistake. These guys in the big leagues will do damage against those type of pitches.
They will.
And it puts a big emphasis on these guys' development with their secondary pitches. And luckily, this guy's got one of the best secondary pitches in all of college baseball. So we'll see what he does with it. It's more so about fastball location, repeating his mechanics, because Jake, I do think at some point or another, this guy's going to have to hone in his mechanics. I don't think that that's repeatable. To be able to expect consistent location, but you don't have a consistent release or motion. So that can all be worked on again. And we have a big track record of doing that. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if this guy projects well.
No, I wouldn't either. We'll be 22 in May of next year. So that's exciting. And, you know, 1.69 ERA in the Cape Cod League, the last guy, the rest, you know, none of those guys are in the.
I also had a 1.45 ERA in the Cape Cod League. I didn't pitch in the Cape Cod, but I had 1.45 ERA.
Oh, man. So the next.
But we have a position player next, right?
No, we don't. We had another pitcher. Oh. He has the best last name. We have Parliament. Wyatt Parliament, Virginia Tech, not ranked by MLB.com. None of the rest of the guys will be. Seventh round, 211th overall, will be 21 next January. Fastball that sits at 92, 94, tops out 97, has some, you know, ride to it. You know, slider, low 80s, cut action, changeup is low 80s. One of the younger college prospects in the draft. I like this because I feel like they wanted to take, they wanted to avoid prep arms like they were the plague. But they wanted to take a prep arm at the same time. So they're like, you know what? We're going to go after Parliament here because it's like a prep arm, except we don't have to wait 3 years because he's already, you know, he'll be 21 next year. So he's one of the younger college guys, but he's already had experience playing at a, you know, a big program like Virginia Tech. So, you know, the velocity, and this was a concern, you know, first time through the order looks fired up, you know, he's letting it go. The second time through the order, the velocity drops. Very early to say whether or not he has the stamina to be a starter. I mean, very early. He's going to be 21 next January. My projection, I'm leaning towards reliever based on that. Just based on that, a lot of things can happen. But I like that they went with a project college arm because I feel like that is, and I'm not hating on it, like, if you want to come out of high school, by all means, if you want to come out of your, you know, prep school, whatever, totally not hating on that. But for the Yankees, if you're a team like the Royals up until this year, well, the Royals probably even still, yeah, by all means, draft all the 18-year-olds you want. The Yankees are trying to win a World Series every single year. That is the goal. So
yeah, we're on a time crunch for sure.
Yeah, so I think going out, you want to delve, in the seventh round into a project, like a real project that he's not at all ready, like some of these other guys might be ready to get up to high A next year. Like, he's not going to see high A. He'll be in low A, or he won't get out of the, the complex league. But regardless, I like the idea of being a little aggressive going after such a project here, but a guy that also played in college.
Jake, he's not even old enough to go to the bar and order a beer. So we'll definitely cut him some slack on this show.
Yeah.
Is it likely that he pans out into absolutely anything? Not likely. There's a reason he's going at this part of the draft, especially as a starting pitcher. But I will say this as a positive. I like differing speeds. And what I mean by that is when a guy throws 100 miles an hour and his slider's 93, 94, you can might as well just call that a cutter. Okay. Parliament is not that way. He's the type of guy who's going to throw 93, 94, but that slider is low 80s. Okay. There's a huge gap there. So if you're talking about a player who eventually, when he becomes a man, he's 21, 22, gets up to age 23 in the Yankee system, you can start to expect that his fastball is going to be able to maintain itself. Hell, he might even add some miles an hour on that fastball. And that slider still should be low to mid 80s. There's a huge gap. And it's potential for swing and miss stuff. Again, this is a guy I project, if everything works out, this is a 4 or 5 in your rotation, but that's a good thing to have still. You still need quality 4s, quality 5s in your rotation, and that's what he is. So I like this, and at some point or another, Yankees did, as you said, they had to go take a prep guy, somewhat of a project. They did a project earlier in the draft who was a college kid who was more ready, flamethrower. This is a different type of project. This is more of a craft guy. He's gonna have to pitch, okay? And so this is different. Different than what the Yankees usually do. They're usually just like all about stuff. This guy's he's a little different.
Yeah, which isn't a bad thing. And then they finally got a bat in the eighth round, 241. He's got some MLB pedigree. His father, Steve Wilson, pitched for the Dodgers, Cubs, and Rangers. He was actually born in Taiwan, so he'll be 23 next July. A little bit on the older side, I guess, in that regard. But 2024 WAC Player of the Year. Hit 378, 17 homers, 65 ribbies. Only struck out 12.9% of the time. He finished college with a 332 average and 920 OPS in 3 years. But in the MLB draft league, he was hitting 209 in 96 plate appearances. So that was a little bit of a concern for people. It's why he fell. Another concern is that he was practicing with the Chinichi Dragons and could be a player that bolts for the Nippon Professional Baseball League in Japan. So I want to make mention of this. First off, let's just say something right now. The Yankees didn't take a batter until the eighth round. So let's just, put it out there. They're trading, whether you want to admit or not, they're trading pitching prospects, upper to middle pitching prospects on their list. They are telling us they're probably going to go out. They didn't draft any infield bats. We were talking about the infield issues. I mean, stock up for Vivas right now. Stock up for Peraza. I don't know. I mean, the stock can't go really up or down. It's just kind of there. But a little win there. Jeter down. Stock up for him. Stock up for, Arias, Roderick Arias and Lombard Jr., who you mentioned. And I would say stock up for Jazz Chisholm, who has, a few years of control. And I think it's going to take those type of arms to go out and get him. And also get a rental and Tanner Scott. So I think, kind of looking at that, I think the Yankees really are telling us they're probably going to be making a trade pretty soon around the deadline.
This Tyler Wilson kid went to my high school.
Did he really?
Yeah, he went to Hamilton High School.
Isn't that so funny?
He's a local. This is a local kid. And this
did
is
you
the
know
first
that ahead
kid.
Of time?
No, I didn't know that ahead of time at
That's
all.
Hilarious.
I was just looking at his profile.
You're like,
this
holy.
Kid, yeah, he went to Hamilton High School, which is where Cody Bellinger went for those of you who recognize MVPs. And this is the first pick that they've made that's more about results than projection. Yes. Okay, this is a kid who hit 400 in conference. So, and for those of you who don't know, the WAC and Grand Canyon University, obviously not too far from where I live, they just became a Division I like maybe 6 or 7 years ago. And that's they've done cool. really well. They used to be coached by Andy Stankiewicz, really good friend of his son, currently playing baseball in Mexico right now. And
these connections, it's a good program. Man.
These connections are insane. It's just a good program. It's well run, heavy on the discipline. So yeah, I mean, if he wants to go play in another league, that's totally fine. But this is a guy who puts up numbers. This isn't a 6'4", 205-pound guy that you're like, okay, I need him to be some superstar and then a boomer bust type guy. This is a guy who does put up numbers. You put him somewhere, he's going to put up numbers. We talked about Ben Rice. Ben Rice, to no stretch of anyone's imagination, a year ago, did people think that he would be contributing for the Yankees? We didn't expect that. But if you look at the numbers, you keep looking down and say, who's that guy? Who's that guy they keep putting third or fourth in the lineup? Ben Rice wasn't this sexy pick, but he was always putting up numbers. He hit, Jake, you've talked about this. He hits everywhere he goes. So yeah, now
everywhere.
Once you get up to all the levels you can go to, well, guess we have to give him an opportunity with the Yankees, in which we did that because of Rizzo's injury. And long story short, we have a contributor. So this is one of those guys who maybe you throw him in a system and he's shown in his past, he'll always make the adjustment to get the numbers that he needs. Maybe he does that in rookie ball, A ball, all the way throughout.
Yeah. And I mean, keep this in mind. When you have 20 rounds, Ben Rice was drafted in the 12th round. So like, you know, we always hear, oh, well, it's a crapshoot and all that. The funny thing about that is that there are teams so particular about where they pick guys that they cause guys to fall through the cracks. And that's how you have that happen. There's no reason for me to sit here and say Tyler Wilson is going to be the outfielder of the future for the Yankees. But there's also no reason for me to sit here and say, this pick means nothing. He'll never see the MLB because I don't know. I don't know. There have been guys that have done that.
We don't know that he can't. That's what we'll say.
I will say this. He is the most fascinating pick that they made for one simple reason. Because if he goes to the NPBL, I think is what it is for short. If he goes there, the Yankees have his rights. So he can't, like, he wouldn't have to post to go into the MLB. The Yankees would own his rights. So I'm almost like interested in the idea. Like, I know people would be like, I hope he signs with the Yankees. I kind of hope he doesn't. And the reason
do you know
why,
who his favorite team is, by the way, is he's going to sign with us. Do you know who his favorite team is?
The Yankees.
That's right. The New York Yankees and the Vancouver Canucks.
Wow.
That's right.
See, but do you see where my mind's at though? If he didn't, because I mean, guys, you know, Japan's different out there, man. There are so many really, really talented players. I'd be very curious. Like, if he decides not to sign and he goes over there and he plays there for 3-4 years, ends up being a star, the Yankees just draft and stashed, and it'd be the best draft and stash ever. It would make the NBA like look like nothing in comparison.
I just thought of the best part of that, Jake. It's a great point made by you, but think of it this way. The Yankees don't have to develop an offensive player. You just let Japan do it for you.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, because we'll just ruin them. That's all we'll do.
Should have said Volpe to Japan.
Amazon Prime
kidding,
over there.
I'm kidding.
I'm not. Totally send him kidding. Over there. I bet you anything he'd get better.
I mean, they just do things differently there. And there's a lot of development. And I mean, there's a lot of respect. I mean, you're not going to see anybody in the United States bowing down.
I want Murakami from over there. I'll be honest with you.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll be honest with you. I think there's a shot they do get him because I think everyone just kind of assumed, oh, the Dodgers have taken over Japan. That's not realistic. They don't have, whether you want to admit it or not, they're going to start clamping down. Like, very soon, the MLB is going to start clamping down on spending money. We've already seen it. They're going to be taking away draft picks, not moving them down. They're going to be taking them away soon, Gary. And I think it will deter the Dodgers because, I mean, we're seeing it right now. You know, like with Mookie Betts injured, that lineup doesn't look great. They're struggling just like the Yankees are. So I would say Murakami is still a possibility.
I said he was going to the Giants. Never forget that.
Okay. I mean, it makes sense. Typically speaking, West Coast, I think, is definitely it's a fair thing. But don't forget, there's a guy by the name of Hideki Matsui that did a lot in the Bronx, is well Definitely. Respected. And I think that always kind of holds firm there, as well as Tanaka. I think those two guys are a big reason why I never count the Yankees out of any sort of, posting effort when you're talking about those guys. I really felt like Yamamoto was going to be a Yankee because of that. And Brian Cashman really went out of his way to recruit him. But we'll keep an eye on him. We'll keep an eye on Tyler Wilson. I'm going to be different from the pack here. I want Tyler Wilson to go overseas and develop. I want him to be the first draft and stash. I mean, there's probably been a guy before, but I want him to be the first Milwaukee draft and stash star.
Was it Eric Thames?
Yeah. Oh, that sounds familiar.
Do you remember that? The super yoked guy who played for Milwaukee. He was a lefty power hitter. He played in Japan. I think he was in Korean League.
And really?
He did amazing. And then he came back to the big leagues and actually was pretty productive. Like, he had a few years in the big leagues where he gave him some production. And that's somewhat of what could happen here with Wilson. So do I anticipate it to happen? Actually, kind of. Yeah, I kind of anticipate it that they're just going to – he'll go play over there, because they do get a pretty penny to go play over there. People don't just play in Japan just for their own health.
No.
They do play well. So it's a matter of if you think, do I genuinely have a future coming through the ranks and playing for the New York Yankees, or am I best off going to just play at this level in Japan? Maybe I'll make $600,000 a year. Well, I would do it.
Yeah. I keep an eye on Tyler Wilson. That's all I'm going to say. I hope he does. We'll see what ends up happening. Tanner Bauman was the second to last pick, 271 overall in the ninth round. Will be 23 next May. I feel like there was a pattern here. The last three picks, after going not like super young the rest of the way, but, you know, getting guys that would be more ready than prep guys, but not guys that were like 24 or whatever. Back to back to back, 8th, 9th, and 10th, they got guys that will be 23 next year. Actually, one guy we'll get to, Joe De Los Santos, that is 23 right now. So I thought that was intriguing, Gary, because I think it kind of shows Tyler Wilson has a shot. I still hope he goes the Japan route, but if he doesn't, he could be in Double A, you know, as soon as the end of next year. And Tanner Bauman out of Auburn, this is a guy, again, they like the stuff, 6'5", 225. They love the height, I guess. I wasn't like ecstatic about this pick, but I also don't really know too much about him. I have what I have here.
He's a JUCO transfer. And yeah, I played junior college baseball. Junior college baseball is not for the faint of heart. So this kid's got grit. And the one thing I will say about junior college baseball and players who have gone through this system is that it's very reminiscent of what you would see in the minor leagues. The minor leagues is not sexy. It's not like getting drafted by the Houston Texans or the Dallas Cowboys and you get to put on a pretty jersey and then go play week one, right, and break into camp. That's not Major League Baseball. That's part of the reason why some of the best athletes in the world don't want to play this sport. Well, yeah, when a player like this goes through the draft, well, he's in the position he's in because of his lack of control. But he's gone through the ranks and through the dark days of college baseball, which is JUCO, and he's going to know what it's like playing in the minor leagues. Obviously, it's different. You're playing against grown men as opposed to college kids. But for the most part, he's going to know how to grind, and he's got to get better. So is this a sexy pick? Not really. This is a player who hasn't really polished his game yet, especially given that he's a senior coming into this draft. But I guess the Yankees tend to figure that they can do more with less. This might be, and I won't predict it to happen whatsoever, but the Yankees are giving it a try.
Yeah, I hear you. And then the final thing here is Joe De Los Santos out of William & Mary, who I'm actually very excited about, because I think this is one of those guys that, you know, his player comp was Jorge Soler, really strong, right? Got great pop, you know, 32 home runs, 285 batting average in college. Sacrificed some speed, so now he's just an average, you know, runner. But again, a lot of pop, a lot of the production.
Yankees getting someone who can't run away. Can he ground it at double plays?
the exit velocity. Do you know what his max exit velo is?
Was this the guy you sent me? Was like 107?
No, It's 118.6.
Oh.
So I was like, oh, okay. It makes sense. The Yankees would be all over him. So,
good Lord.
Yeah. This is somebody who fell because he's 23. And that's all I got. I don't really know why he fell aside from that. But I like it. I think the, you know, keep an eye on those two bats, because I honestly wouldn't have been surprised the way it was going that they'd just take 10 pitchers. They took these guys because they saw something in them. They didn't just take them like, oh, yeah, we haven't taken a bat yet, so we should probably just take anybody. Like, I don't think that's what went down. So
no, they probably really liked these kids
yeah.
at the back of the draft, and that's probably why they went with them. But like you said, this is at the very least our takeaway, is that the Yankees are saying, we're going to trade for the offensive talent, okay?
Yeah.
Our outfield guys, Dominguez, Jones.
And these bats were overrated. Kind of, they told us that. You know, just by the way they drafted.
Sure. But I will say the Yankees in general, well, I guess if you look at the way the Yankees have drafted, they've drafted a lot of shortstops. They've drafted bats before. Just like hasn't worked.
Three of the last 4 years, I think. Trey Sweeney. It wasn't three of the last 4 years, because I mean, Spencer Jones is in there. But
the positional players, they've absolutely tried to figure out how to fill some of these holes. And in general,
six.
It's still a lot.
Yeah.
So the Yankees are in a situation where they've drafted probably 15 position players the last 20 years that we've never really heard of. In the first round, there are a lot of guys that the average Yankees fan has no idea who they are, and that's not their fault. That is the New York Yankees' problem. You need to draft these players. You need to develop these players. And when they're developed and they're hitting well, you need to be able to have belief that they can do it at the big league level. Don't tell me that you're afraid that their trade value is going to drop off and then you don't trade them, right? We've done this with Pereira, okay? There are plenty of players in Major League Baseball throughout the Yankee system that we've done this, okay? We've done it with Floreal, Frazier. The list goes on. So the whole point of this, Jake, the Yankees are going all in on pitching. And it tells the story that the Yankees are going to go all in on offensive players at the deadline. We've only got like maybe about 2 weeks until we start bringing in all our guests and them hopefully breaking some news, because the Yankees need some big trades. It can't be Whit Merrifield and some reliever, Pipsqueak, right? From a losing organization like Chicago. It can't be that, okay? Because the Yankees need to get aggressive. They need to be intentional about what they're doing heading into the trade deadline. That's all we're saying on this channel, is that this team needs to be proactive, because we've in general been we just tiptoe around the deadline, right? I understand losing value. You trade this guy, you go get Joey Gallo, but nobody thought Joey Gallo was going to be like, how many people really thought Joey Gallo was the answer to our prayers?
There were a lot of people that wanted him badly. And I was sitting there and I was like, this guy's
isn't there a difference between wanting a player and thinking that this is the perfect fit? Because you can get better while also acknowledging this isn't all the way in. And Brian Cashman, at least in my opinion, I've rarely seen him do an all-in move. And if you're going to go all-in on pitching in the draft, you need to go all-in on position players at the deadline. And that's something that needs to happen, because if not, Jake, this draft can turn right on its, like, honestly, right on its rear end. If we don't see a heavy trade deadline, like we don't see Jazz Chisholm, we don't see Tanner Scott, we don't see any of these things. Suddenly I'm looking at, like, why did we just pile our farm system with starting pitching and projects if we didn't anticipate making any, you know, preceding moves?
No, I absolutely agree with you. You have to. I mean, and this is, it goes hand in hand. I mean, I would say this, and I saw somebody tweet it out. I forget who tweeted this out, but the Yankees.
It's probably me.
The Yankees drafted. I mean, they pretty much most of the time draft to trade away. They're not drafting a ton of these guys to actually develop. They'll take a handful. But for the most part, they're drafting a lot of them to trade away. This is a draft, in my opinion, that they drafted to keep. Like, I think a lot of these guys, they're not going to trade away. They are going to overwrite, like, I can't believe I just used the saved game file analogy, back-to-back shows. But they are going to overwrite them. They're gonna overwrite.
So I'm guessing you're gonna go see that new movie that's it's like Fly Me to the Moon with Channing Tatum and I can't remember whatever her name is, where they where they tell us, remember, because going to the moon, they say that when they went to the moon, the reason we don't have footage is because they taped on over it on accident.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, I swear to you, you've never known that. Yeah, NASA doesn't have any footage of us going to the moon, like all of, like how we got there, like we don't have any of that data anymore. It's because they say they taped over it. Now I'm not a conspiracy theorist, that's what NASA said. So yeah, so that's essentially what you're going with here.
Oh, it's funny though, because I mean, no, like it makes sense though. We talked about it, you know, the full pitcher list that we talked about already. We went through the entire thing. Carlos LaGrange, Henry LaLanne in rookie ball. Those guys are getting overwritten, in my opinion. They're not keeping Henry LaLanne. He's the number 8th prospect. It doesn't make any sense. The timeline isn't there. So they would be overwriting him with Ben Hess. See what I'm saying? Like Bryce Cunningham would override, Carlos LaGrange. And now you have these guys that are going up the rungs, right? So Gary, they go up there on the list when the top 30 gets, you know, recalibrated after the deadline, I would assume, because they do that. Remember, we were all feverishly waiting for Spencer Jones, and then he got listed as, I think, the 5th overall prospect. But, I mean, it's going to happen. Once that recalibration happens, right around, I would say, where LaLanne is. Right? Actually, let's do something even better. I'm going to bring up the top 10, the top 30 list right now, and I'm going to tell you who, out of the guys that they drafted, where they're going to go, or where I would put them. So Jason Dominguez, Spencer Jones, Chase Hampton, Arias Pereira, Lombard Jr., Will Warren, Henry LaLanne, Brando Maia, and Brock Selvidge. Out of those guys, Hess to me, I mean, he could be number 3, if I'm being honest. I mean, he'd be ahead of Chase Hampton potentially.
That doesn't seem like a good thing.
No, I mean, that's, well, it's good and bad. Because Hampton's been dealing with injury. Hampton, you know, he's 22 and he's almost ready for the big leagues, is what they're saying.
Scouts are saying reached on this player, and suddenly a player that you've had in your system for multiple years, you have a better player now. You know what I mean? Like, it's a good thing, and also, like, what were you doing with that guy?
Maybe it's a little unrealistic because, I mean, Chase Hampton is now 22 years old. So he is he's actually younger. No, he's a month older than Hess. Okay. So he'll be 23 in August. And he is essentially, his ETA was 2024 before he got hurt. So yeah, maybe that's a little much. I'll say Ben Hess would definitely be ahead of Will Warren. Warren is 25 years old. And his ETA was this year, okay? I think Hess is ahead of Warren. I think Hess, I mean, Lombard Jr.'s listed as 6th. I'd put him ahead of Pereira.
Yeah, Will Warren, so, I mean, he just had a big start, but overall, he's been pretty underwhelming.
Yeah, so I would put him ahead of Will Warren. I think, yeah, Hampton's probably still the number 1 arm in the farm, which is fine. I think Bryce Cunningham goes ahead of Will Warren, right? Okay. I think there's a possibility you can make there. Now, Thatcher Hurd, does he make the top 10? I'm going to say he doesn't. I think he'd be outside of the top 10. Zeal would be outside of the top 10. Carter would be outside of the top. I think those guys would be in the, like, the 11 to 20 range. Herring would probably be in the, you know, 21 to 25 range. Parliament, probably 26 to 30 range. Wilson, 26 to 30. Bauman, maybe ranked, maybe not. De Los Santos would probably be like 30th. So I think most of the guys are going to be ranked, which honestly brings up like a really good point though, because those guys getting ranked, it doesn't mean that these guys are less valuable, you know, and that happens after the trade deadline. So there's still plenty of guys. Jace Avina is a guy that keeps getting brought up in, you know, conversations and whatnot. I see him listed. I mean, he's hitting, you know, 271, and all these like mock trades from other, you know, people that don't cover the Yankees that are just talking about trading to the Yankees. they always list Avina, and this is somebody that isn't exactly blowing the doors off. So
yeah, I mean, that's good news because that means they're seeing something.
It's which is kind of why I hesitate that this list isn't exactly, you know what I mean? Like teams will literally be like, oh, Cade Smith, and he's 23rd on the Yankees farm system. He has an ETA of 2026. He's in high A. Like, you and I might not even think about Cade Smith at all.
Well, it's like Lombard Jr. Lombard Jr., the Yankees say that's their third favorite prospect. Lombard Jr., you'd expect to look at the stat sheet and he'd be hitting 285. But if you turn it on, you'd say, well, this is the guy they're excited about? Well, there's some reason that they are. But if you ask another organization, hey, how's Lombard Jr. sound in the trade? They'd be like, eh, they might say yeah. But it just because you find him valuable doesn't mean it's worth jack. To another organization. So that those numbers take them with a grain of salt because that it's just those projections. Okay. So
yeah.
The Yankees have to figure out offensively what they're doing. We're gonna know in 2 weeks, Jake. We're gonna know in 2 weeks if this was a good draft. If not, you can go ahead and scratch this whole video, hour and 20. Go ahead and wipe it clean. Cause at that point, we've just got a farm system full of arms with no bats. And so we wait and see. We'll have plenty of episodes before them.
It is funny because I had also saw a big reason like on Twitter why people were like, yeah, I don't really agree with what they were doing, although I think they're doing it because they're trying to essentially like fill in the gaps that they lost with Juan Soto. Can I just be brutally honest? They didn't really lose much with Juan Soto. Michael King was definitely a loss, but you know, and of course,
he's a reliever.
Of course, Drew Thorpe is really good. He'd probably be in the rotation right now. He'd be pushing somebody out of it. But aside from that, like, I'm not sitting here like, oh man, you know, I'm really, really bummed that one guy who pitched well in spring training was traded. I can't even remember his name, dude.
Who?
The guy who pitched against the Yankees and they like swatted. I can't even remember his name. I mean,
no clue.
I have to bring up their roster right now because I can't even remember him. And I don't mean to be disrespectful. It's just I disagree with the idea that they lost so many guys. Johnny Brito, like that to me is not somebody like, oh, you know, we really need to draft 8 out of the 10 picks to be pitchers because we lost Johnny Brito. Like, I'm not sitting there thinking that, you know?
They're probably not thinking that.
No, they're not. And so that's kind of the point I'm making is that I don't agree with the idea that they did this because they gave up so much for, you know, Juan Soto. I don't believe that for a second. And, with that said, to wrap it up, I do want to throw something out there to make everyone feel old. Just looked at the Padres farm system. Homer Bush Jr.
I feel like I'm qualified to say this. I hate seeing juniors. I hate it. There's nothing.
Yeah, you can say that.
I can say it. Anytime I see like a. Because anytime you see like, oh, this is LeBron James Jr. He's trying to make it into the NBA. He gets drafted by the Lakers, number 55 overall. And I'm sitting there thinking, I remember in like 2004 being like, oh, who's this young kid? Oh, he's 19 years old. Who is that? Oh, his name is LeBron James. He's supposed to be the next all-time superstar. He's the next Michael Jordan. I go, wow. And then you fast forward 20 years. It's just a reminder that it's 20 years later for everybody.
You want to hear something crazy? And then we'll end the show.
What's that?
So T.Y. Hilton, remember that receiver?
Yeah. Yeah, he's Indianapolis.
34 years old. His kid just committed to college.
Well, geez, what do you have him when he was 11? Kid was in seventh grade with two kids.
Oh, man. So, yeah, I mean, it's just funny, man. It's funny seeing... I thought it was pretty good this year. There weren't too many juniors in the draft. I didn't feel as old, but like when I saw like Biggio's kid and like all that, I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yep. Vladdy Jr. So, you see all these players. Yeah, you're like, Vladdy, oh, I'm old, older than dirt.
Yep. No, I hear you. But that's going to do it. So we hope you guys enjoyed this special episode. I don't know what pieces of content we're putting out this week. We might take some days off because it's, you know, we're not going to get much once the trade deadline commences and all that. But
we're not going to talk Homer Derby. I'll tell you that.
No, I don't care what happened. If Judge isn't in it, I don't want it. So yeah, that's going to do it. We appreciate you guys. Be sure to follow us on all social media at JK Bogan, at Gary Sheffield Jr., and at Yankees Unloaded. And let us know in the comment section how we did, how you think we did, what your thoughts are. And I want to know, who's your favorite prospect out of everybody that they drafted? Drop that in the comment section below. Be sure to like, subscribe, and comment. And we'll see you guys in the next episode.
And like this video.